Hey guys, I have a question for you. How do you spread abundance? This year, Joe and I are spreading even more abundance by giving out insights on money, wealth strategies, and resources in our current newsletter, Creating Abundance in 52 Weeks, that we want to share with you for free. So sign up right now as you're listening to this episode on our website at www.abundantculture.co. That's .co/newsletter, www.abundantculture.co/newsletter. Don't let delay get in the way of your abundant year. Now, back to the episode.
Welcome back to Abundant Culture Podcast,
where we dissect the mindsets and tactics of the true beasts of business.
People like Gary Vee, Grant Cardone, and Warren Buffett.
All to create a blueprint to experience life more abundantly.
This week, we're diving into how to become a top realtor and get massive growth. Most realtors only do about 1 to 2 transactions a year, but then you have other realtors that give it their all. And this week's guest went from less than 2 mil in sales to 9.7 mil over the course of 2 years. And in this episode, he's talking about the importance of a team, how to differentiate yourself, 3 things you should be doing each day, and so much more. So get ready to listen to and learn from our good friend, John Warren. Hi, John, and thank you again for coming on to the Abundant Culture Podcast. We are super, super excited to have you today because, you know, everybody wants to get into real estate. And a lot of people just go towards the realtor side at first. So we're really excited to talk about, you know, what that looks like and how people can scale up in that. But before we go into, you know, the meat and potatoes of that side of the conversation, we have to ask you, what is your story? Like, how did you get into business?
Yeah, for sure. Guys, I'm really excited to be here, and I'm really excited to kind of tell my story about starting off as a realtor. So a lot of people, when they start thinking about getting into real estate as a realtor, it kind of goes hand in hand with the investing side, at least a lot of the people I know, because I started out wanting to be an investor. Like a lot of people, I read that little purple book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and that, you know, kind of blows up your mind. You start thinking, oh my goodness. All the possibilities. So I'd read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I also read the Cash Flow Quadrant book by Robert Kiyosaki. And I wanted to get on the investor side instead of being in the, you know, the W-2 world where you're just getting, you know, paid for your time. So I purchased a 4-unit property in 2015. It was a great property. I still own it today. And when I purchased that 4-unit property, I decided to get my license at the same time. I saw my realtor and I thought, man, that looks really easy. I'm sure I could have done that. Yeah, not so much. So I get my license, and honestly, I didn't do anything with it for almost a whole year. I just had the license. I thought that I would have some kind of superpower to see all these off-market deals on the MLS. Also not true. My realtor was showing me everything that was on the MLS. So I got my license, and I had this investment property. It was just kind of cooking along, and a friend of mine asked me to help them buy a house in 2016. I said, okay, why not? So I did it and got done. I was like, that was really fun. And didn't think that much of it, just thought, this is cool. So kind of fast forward to the next year, 2017, I started thinking, hey, maybe I could make some extra money if I really start doing this. So I finally read a book on how to be a realtor, finally, at this point, and told everybody in my sphere of influence that I was a realtor. And from there, I was able to get some sales going. I did just under 2 million in sales that year in 2017. And then I kind of got the bug. I was like, this is really cool. And I started really pushing hard, learning the craft of being a realtor. In 2018, I jumped to 5.5 million in sales. And then last year, 2019, went to 9.7 million in sales. So as I focused and learned the craft, obviously success followed in all that hard work and everything. So that's kind of the backstory of how I got into becoming a realtor. It was sort of by accident, and then I fell in love with it.
That's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. So were you doing anything else? Like, were you working like another job while you were kind of dibbling and dabbling in real
stuff? Yeah. In the beginning I was, I had a W-2 job. And then also during that whole time, of course, in the background, I also bought 58 apartments, some of which were gut reno jobs and value add investing. It was really fun. So that was going on at the exact same time as I was building my realtor business.
That's awesome.
That's really cool. So what does a day in the life of a realtor really look like nowadays? Because I've always kicked around the idea of, man, like, you know, like, I just think it's like, so I started off as an investor, and when you're an investor and, you know, deal flow kind of sucks sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
You start looking at being a realtor, you're like, man, crap, I could sell something retail. I mean, I do like the other side of it. So what does it really look like to be a realtor? Because some people may think that it's easier than it is. Some people may think that it's a little bit harder than what it is.
Yeah. So a day in the life of the realtor, if you're a good realtor, you have to really be careful with your time. I guess I'll start there. So every day I do some sort of lead generation. So leads are kind of the heart of the business. If you don't have leads, you just have a license that's burning money in your pocket. That's literally what all this business is. So every day I break out time for prospecting. So that has to do with online work. You know, I'll go on Bigger Pockets and network with people. I also call people in my sphere of influence, set up in-person meetings with people. I run a meetup. So every day there is some sort of prospecting going on. I also focus on marketing every day. I do almost 3,000 pieces of direct mail a month right now. So that obviously is a pretty big spend, and it's focused in my farm area, which is about, you know, within 5 mile radius of my home. So that way I can really get to these areas and I know them really well. So that's one part of the day. And then once you get your business up and running, you also have what I would call like transaction management. So at any given time, I'll have between 8 and 15 transactions in the pipeline right now. So like right now I have 8 listings currently. And then I'm also doing buy side showings and writing offers. So you have existing business that you have to service, which is important, right? Like if you're helping them buy or sell their house, they want to know that you're involved and that you care and that you're paying attention. So part of my day is time blocked to doing that. And then, of course, there's the actual appointments. So the whole goal of all of this is for you to meet new buyers and sellers and constantly be meeting new buyers and sellers because you have to. So I also time block that out as well. I have certain days where I try to put those appointments. And of course, it doesn't always work perfectly. Sometimes people don't fit into your schedule and you have to kind of rearrange your life a little bit. But yeah, that's the name of the game. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it's kind of like, I think of it almost like there's the three prongs. There's lead generation, and then there's the transaction management, keeping your existing business, and then there's all the appointments that you have to do, showing real estate and doing listing appointments.
That's awesome, because I've never heard it articulated that professionally and that clearly, mm-hmm. that those are the main three things that you should be doing within your day. So how do you split up the time? Is it all evenly throughout those three job descriptions, or is it like an hour of this, a couple hours of that, and, you know, another one takes up most of your time?
I would say that the most time consuming thing you do is when you're actually going and showing real estate, or if you're doing a listing appointment, because there's commute time and things like that. So obviously if I'm driving to see a property, depending on how far away it is, you have that burn time in between here and there. Yeah. And then sometimes the clients are late or things go wrong when you're doing showings. It's fun. That's the part where I think you spend the most time if you're not careful. Lead generation and prospecting, you know, for me, I'm really disciplined with it. I spend a very consistent amount of time every day. I do spend a lot of time, you know, probably 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day on that kind of activity, because that's a huge component of the business. And then the transaction management, you spend as much time as you need to do a good job. So I don't know if there's a answer that. And of course, the problem with that is that as you grow, that part of it grows with it, right? The administrative back end part of it grows. And so that's where you have to hire help, frankly, to help you as you scale.
That's awesome. So like, is hiring that help something that's very common as a realtor? Because I always thought that it was like this type of solo thing. Is that something that's kind of like normal in the industry?
There's a couple different models in the industry right now. So there are a lot of solo agents, many, many, many solo agents. And that's one of the older models that's out there, and it still works great. You know, there's a lot of solo agents that do really, really well. There are also people like me that are creating a team. So eventually you create a real estate team, and what that allows you to do is get leverage. And in that case, what leverage typically means is systems and people, because you can only be in so many places at a time. So this is right. Something that I've run into, you know, if you're working with, say, 15 buyers at a time, which is something that I do fairly regularly, it gets to a point where you can literally only be in one, you know, so many places. And no matter how tightly you pack your day and how carefully you craft your day, you can only do so many appointments. And so that's where you do eventually have to hire if you want to scale beyond a certain point. You hit kind of a hard cap at how many transactions or how much, you know, how much sales volume you can do by yourself.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So then what did it look like when you first started like getting serious with real estate?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, when you start out, and this is something that anybody that gets their real estate license realizes, you get your license and you're like, yeah, I'm here, I'm ready to do business. And then you realize this isn't a job, it's a business. So any business that doesn't have customers is a really poor business. It's just like if you were to start a restaurant and nobody was there to buy your food or, you know, any right. kind of business. So when I got my license and was like, I'm open for business, then I actually had to learn how to get people to work with. And that's where lead generation really comes in. So I started, you know, doing some reading, studying, and I found out ways that you can grow your business as a realtor. And so I think in the beginning, that's a lot of what it was, is me kind of fumbling and learning and trying to figure out the best way to get business, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then to follow up with that, when someone does want to enter into that part of the real estate world, how do they determine like which company they're going to go with? Because there is like
$1 million question. So I think there's no one right answer for that. Some people like me are self-starters and don't need as much coaching and mentoring. Other people try to start out with a smaller company and they desperately need help and they flounder and they realize they need that coaching. So I think when you look at some of the big names in the industry, what you really want to look at is if you're a new realtor is what are you getting from them? Most of the big names will take a much more significant part of your commission. But if they're giving you training and guidance along the way, it can also shorten your learning curve. So that's a good thing. I started out with a 100% commission brokerage, which is still in existence, and the guy is a great broker. For me, that worked really well because I was doing it part-time at first. And so as I transitioned into full-time, it was fine. I didn't get a whole lot of guidance, but I also was able to find my own resources to kind of, you know, to learn what I needed to learn. Then I transitioned to working with Second City Real Estate, where I am now. It was just a perfect fit because my business really focused, I'd say probably over half of my business focuses on investors, people that are buying residential and commercial real estate for investment purposes. And so that's what they do. And so I made that switch mostly to align my business with them, but I never had like a large brokerage there to coach me, if that makes any sense.
That makes sense for sure.
But I think that a new realtor would want to really think about, you know, their ability to learn on their own and whether they feel comfortable doing the business on their own. Some people don't. And so it might make sense to find a brokerage with more training.
Definitely. So how do you differentiate yourself in this world of realtors? Because I go to meetups sometimes, and sometimes it seems like there's a lot of you guys. So how
there might be a couple realtors out there, right?
Yeah, for sure. So how do you differentiate?
Well, I should say, just as a funny aside, I mean, part of the reason for the fact there's so many realtors at these meetups is that's one of the things that a lot of the really good books tell you to do is start your own meetup, which is something that I did. So yeah, I'm at my own meetup, you know, like tonight I actually am hosting it in Forest Park. But So how do I differentiate myself? I really think that as a realtor, it's just like anything else, the 80-20 principle, Pareto's principle really applies, right? Like 80% of the realtors are not really a threat to your business. Even if you're starting out, you can jump to the top 20% by just picking up your phone and doing the basics and being disciplined. So I think if you're starting out, it's really just all about follow-up, discipline, tenacity, doing what you're supposed to do and doing it consistently, knowing that the results are going to follow. So it's kind of like farming. If you don't put the seeds in, you're definitely not going to get a crop next year. And sometimes it is a whole year before you get paid or more. I have leads that I've been following now for almost 2 years that are seller leads that I'm going to list their property, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So when you're starting out, you get a lead and you think, oh man, I didn't get anything 3 months later. Well, you might get something, but it might be 2 or 3 years down the line. So if you let go of that lead, you'll never, ever harvest that crop, even though you put the work in for it initially. So I guess that's the main thing I do to differentiate myself is just that the follow-up, the discipline, the tenacity. once you get into the top 20%, I think everybody needs to find a niche. So once you've, you know, you've kind of differentiated yourself from the 80% that don't pick up their phones, then you find your niche. And for me, that was working with investors initially. I mean, I've done a lot of work with investors. Last year, my business, which was about 10 million in sales, about 60% of it was investor business. So some people are scared of investors. I am one, so I can speak the lingo and it makes sense to me. So that was kind of my niche within, you know, becoming the top 20%. That helped me kind of make the jump from there. And after that, I think once you want to really propel yourself forward from there, you have to realize that real estate is a team sport. So you can't do everything yourself. I mean, aligning yourself with the right professionals in the field. So I have a really fantastic lender that I work with. I don't know, can I give him a shout out? Josh Jones,
Loan Depot. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's a fantastic lender. He really helped me start my investing career. I never would have been able to buy that first four flat without Josh. He really got it going for me. Having a good lender, a good attorney that I can work with that's really a partner, not just somebody I refer clients to, but he cares about my business. Inspectors, contractors, I mean, all these things come into play as you get into this business. You know, having a good painter you can refer, a good cleaning person, a good handyman. All this stuff is very important. So as you grow, you just keep trying to network and build your team.
Absolutely. So when you're out there trying to build your team, what are the key components or the characteristics that you look for in somebody that you're trying to bring on to your network and your team so that you can refer them to clients?
Yeah, they have to have the same values that I do. So I care deeply about my clients. And you know, if I have a buyer or a seller that needs something, I try to be responsive. Responsiveness is a really, really big deal to me. So the lender that I work with, the attorney, the inspector, these are all people that give their cell phone out to their clients. Even on a weekend, you can get a hold of them if you need to. It's not, you know, one of those where it's like Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and then the door comes slamming shut. Because real estate, it kind of goes, you know, 7 days a week, 365. Mm-hmm. So all the people I work with care about their clients, they're responsive, and they're professionals. You know, they're in this for the long haul. My lender has been in the business over 10 years. My attorney's been in the business over 10 years, even though they're younger. This is their profession and they have really good teams behind them. So it's like, you know, even when you're working with a lender, an attorney, I personally like to work with people who have excellent staff. It's not just them. So if they're out sick one day, things are still happening. Things are still moving.
Right.
So that's part of what I look for as well.
That's excellent. I really like that nugget that you gave about having an excellent staff, because I have been in business transactions with people who either don't have a staff or don't utilize it correctly. And like, I've just now started listening to myself when it comes to that role.
Sure.
And every time it bit me in the butt. Somehow something happened and it's like, dang it. Like, I should have hired somebody who had, you know.
Yeah. It's everything you do in business, right? I mean, property management, my property manager is a huge company. So yes, the owner is responsive, but if he's out sick, things still get done. I mean, you have to have that all across, you know, anything you do in business, I think.
For sure. That's a really, really smart nugget. Yeah. Everybody should take note of that.
Yes.
Please, yeah, for sure.
Write it down.
For sure.
It's all about the team, right?
Definitely.
Absolutely. So another question I just thought of is, you were talking about once you get into that 20% echelon, that someone needs to find their niche. Like, what are the different niches that somebody can go into?
Sure. So, I mean, like, a lot of realtors like to imagine themselves in the luxury market. You know, you're doing listings that are worth millions and millions of dollars. I mean, obviously that's pretty cool, because if you close one, you get a huge commission, but of course they don't transact as frequently. Commercial real estate is a niche that a lot of people may overlook that is really, really good. And obviously even within commercial, you can do multifamily, you can do office buildings, industrial. There's all these different little, I guess, sub niches. I don't know, is that even a word? But there's all these little different things you can find. And then even just within like residential real estate, you can think of different niches you could find. Like, maybe in your area, there's a lot of condos. You know, if you're in the city or even the suburbs, there's towns where I'm at where there's a lot of condos. I market to those. You know, the price point's above 200,000. I can make money doing condos. That's a great niche for me. Single families, you know, obviously single family homes. But, and then even thinking about single families, you might think about the different price points. Some people may find that they really connect with a certain type of seller. Maybe there's like a working class area, you feel comfortable there, or there's maybe an upper middle class area and you feel comfortable there. I think what you really kind of have to do when you're new is, as you're trying to explore and find your niche, is try different things and see what sticks. Yeah. So for me, I was trying a lot of like single family homes that were more expensive. Like I tried to get a listing that was $500,000 and I lose out on it. I'm like, oh, darn, that stinks. And then I found that I kept getting these investor clients, you know, to buy and sell real estate with them. And I thought, well, this is cool. They're not very emotional. And they kept transacting and they kept transacting. And a lot of them have done 3 or 4 transactions with me. So that's great too, because you don't have to go get new business. The same business keeps transacting over and over again. So I kind of, it feels like I fell into that niche, but I didn't, right? I found that niche after kind of trial and error.
For sure. And did you really encounter any real growing pains between 2018 and 2019 when you had such a significant increase in business? What did you do in order to make that happen? And then two, yeah, what were the growing pains that were involved in that, if any?
Yeah, there's this deep, dark secret called hard work. That's really helped me out. You know, those 70, 80 hour weeks are really helpful for growing any business.
For sure.
Kind of grinding. But there does come a limit to that. And I think that that was probably my biggest growing pain, was realizing at some point I had to hire people, kind of like I was talking about earlier with a team. So I got to the point where I finally hired an admin assistant, and that was amazing. And she does a lot of things that I stink at and does them way better than me. So realizing that I needed to hire people was probably the most important thing that I learned from that transition to, you know, doing $5-6 million of sales to 10 million. It's not a humongous jump in some ways, but it is in other ways, because your transactions double and you start kind of like, if you're juggling all the balls, you start dropping them. And that's when you know you need help and you have to hire, or you have to, you know, step back and just be okay with the business you have. And like earlier, you were asking about solo agents. I think there's a lot of solo agents that can do maybe 2 to 3 transactions a month. And that's really all that they're going to ever handle. And that's okay, because they can make, frankly, really good money doing that. But it's always going to be a sales position for them. There's never going to be an ability to like go on vacation or things like that if they don't build a real business with a team.
Yeah, definitely.
So what kind of like sales and marketing and maybe even like leadership development, like what kind of trainings would you recommend to those agents that maybe they didn't sign up with like a big brokerage, so they don't really have like that hand holding?
Yeah. I mean, the most important thing for me have just been books. I didn't write all these down, so I have to think a little bit about them, but I read, let's see if I can find it on my shelf, How to Make It Big as a Real Estate Agent by Mark Ferguson. He's a Bigger Pockets guy. I don't get anything from that. I'm not associated with him, but his $12 book was amazing and helped me make, you know, 6 figures within a couple years, which is pretty awesome. Good $12 investment.
Definitely.
That was a book that I get a lot of value out of. I'm currently reading The Millionaire Real Estate Agent by Gary Keller, which is another kind of like mainstay in the realtor world. Just there are so many good books out there. I think that if you're a reader, start with books, because they're maybe $20, $15, and you can get a ton of good information from highly successful people. And you don't have to redesign the wheel. This is an old business. Even though there's a lot of new tools, it's still the same business. It's a people business. It's a service business. So just finding those good books, that to me, that's the best resource. You can obviously do coaching. Like in many things, there's a lot of real estate coaches. They're pretty expensive. I've personally never done one yet. I've looked into them and I can see maybe doing one in the future, but that's another option. If you decide not to go with a big brokerage and you feel that you need more training, you could hire a coach. That's one option. Podcasts. I listen to a lot of real estate podcasts that are for realtors. Trying to think of some of the ones I can shout out. Like the Tom Ferry podcast is really good.
Cool.
There's also one in Chicago, the Keeping It Real podcast, which is just for realtors. That's a pretty cool one. So like, yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can learn without being a part of a huge brokerage. There's options, I think, in 2020.
For sure. Definitely.
So do you have any other like marketing tips for realtors that are trying to build up their brands and get like all those leads and sales like in the pipeline?
That's an interesting question. I just feel like no matter what you do, and I don't know if this is really going to answer the question, but I feel like follow-up is key. So you're going to learn as you grow your business what works and what doesn't work. And there are a lot of kind of like shiny object syndromes out there. You can see all these different things you could do. You know, I could do Facebook leads, or I could pay for Zillow leads, or I could, you know, send direct mail, or I could do billboards or bus benches. There's just a million things you could spend your money on as a realtor. In fact, everybody wants your money. That's the interesting thing. But all these things that you do, they work. So if you do cold call leads, or you call for sale by owners or expires, everything works. You just have to follow up. So I think the biggest trap is that you try something for a couple months and then you get a lead from it and you do nothing with that lead because it didn't transact right away. Yeah. So, I mean, I know that may sound like kind of a cop out, but it all works. You'll find what works best for your business through trial and error, but then you have to follow up with those leads. Like I was saying, I transacted a listing last year here locally in Berwyn, which is one of my farm areas. And that was almost 2 years after I did the initial direct mail campaign. And it was a direct mail campaign that I didn't even really like. I didn't feel like it was very effective. I didn't like the marketing, the branding. I moved on from that provider. But that lead was with me. And the guy called me one night when I was out doing showings. And he said, hey, do you want to come see this place? And I'm thinking, I don't even know who this guy is. Honestly, couldn't remember who he was. I went and saw it, tracked it back to a mailer I'd done almost 2 years before, got the listing, sold it. It was a great, you know, it was a great listing in my target area. So it's all about the follow-up. If I had not followed up with that lead, then that would have been wasted money, thousands of dollars just down the drain.
Absolutely.
I love that because, like you said, there it's 2020. Like, there is so much, you know, new stuff out there to do.
Yes.
But really, it's all about continuing, like, following up with whatever you did in the past. And I think that's really important because people, they jump from one thing to the next because they're like, oh, this doesn't work, so I'm just going to do the next thing. And then they just forget about all the people that they collected in the first half, and now they're on to the second half thinking they're starting from zero, and they're not. So I think that was a great point.
Yeah, I think the hard part, if you're starting out as a realtor, is you have to realize you're not going to make anything for 6 months, mm-hmm. and it might be a year. And that scares a lot of people because you're literally laying seeds that are going to turn into a crop later on. But this is a slow business, right? Like, people don't just buy and sell their house on a whim most of the time. Sometimes they do, and you might get lucky. But in general, you know, it's the market statistics say that most people are not moving every year. It's, you know, 5 years or 4 years or 7 years, depending on what area you're in. So you might meet somebody that's kind of at the front end of their journey of thinking of selling or buying. And it may be a year before they actually transact, or 2 years, or 3 years, or 10 years. I think you just never let go of a lead. If somebody's still responding, I'm going to keep going after them. If they haven't told me no, like, go jump off a bridge, I'm going to keep calling them.
Exactly.
And eventually they're gonna buy with me or sell with me, right? So that's what it's all about, is that tenacity to follow up.
Definitely. For sure. So what is the number one takeaway that you would want anyone to really get from this podcast episode with you?
That is a great question. I feel like I've been saying it over and over again, but the follow-up and tenacity. So if you start out as a realtor, don't give up in the first 6 months. Like, follow your business plan, be disciplined, put your repetitions in. And a lot of these books talk about some of the things that you're supposed to be doing to generate leads and to generate business. If you do the work and you track the work and you know you're doing the right things, you will get business from it, but you have to wait for that business to, it kind of like a crop, it has to grow before you can harvest it. Mm-hmm. So you have to put the work in and be patient and follow up.
Absolutely.
Love it.
And whether it's in your personal life or even in your business, how do you like to spread abundance? Because you're on the Abundant Culture podcast. We're all about spreading abundance, whatever gifts, talents, or even money that you have. How do you like to do that in your own life?
So, yeah, I was waiting for this question. It's such an interesting question. I think I'm really privileged to get to work with people and, you know, buying and selling their properties, sometimes their houses, sometimes their apartment buildings, all kinds of different properties. But I really love that I get to help them see ways to maximize their returns and to get more out of what they have. For instance, last year I sold a neighbor's 2-unit property and he was kind of tired of it. It ended up transacting off market. And 2 days before closing, their friends, so I said, hey, what are you guys doing with the money? Because I knew that they were going to net some money because they'd owned it for 35 years. They go, I don't know, we have to pay taxes on it. I said, if you could do it like a tax deferred exchange, 1031 exchange. And they're like, what's that? And right there, I realized, oh my gosh, yeah. So I was able to save them all the money, and it was going to mess up their kids' college because they have 2 kids in college. So they were going to, like, you know, Pell Grant was going to get messed up. They were going to lose scholarships. So they did a tax deferred exchange, didn't mess up their college. They bought two more properties that they're going to give to their two kids. And it's like, those are the kind of opportunities that I love, where I can take knowledge that's common to me, maybe common to you guys, because you're going to places like, you know, the 10X conference. And, you know, we're networking with people who know what a 1031 exchange is. But you get to meet people and help them truly change their lives, like, in, you know, their financial lives. It helps their kids' college education. It helps their retirement. It helps them not pay Uncle Sam for another 30 or 40 or maybe never, you know, years. I think that's the coolest thing about what I get to do, is get to help other people grow their wealth and make really smart decisions that will really impact their lives.
That is really, really cool.
That is. That's amazing. I mean, because everybody doesn't have, you know, the knowledge that we have. Like you said, we network with the people that have the knowledge, but that doesn't mean that there's people out there that know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even people you might expect, like people that have owned rental properties for years or things, they don't, like you said, it's 2020, but some people are not listening to the same podcasts or not learning in the same ways. Mm-hmm. And this information isn't necessarily common to the general public. So, you know, being able to educate people about all their options is a really great opportunity for me.
Absolutely.
Love it.
For sure.
So for the person that they think you're awesome and they're like, he's a wealth of knowledge, I need to get help from him. I need help. Or maybe they're like, I have a property to sell, or anything. How does that person get into contact with you? And also, what are your, I think you call them farm areas, that you help people in?
So to answer that question first, I work in the western suburbs of Chicago, but like the near western suburbs. So Berwyn, Forest Park, Oak Park, Elmwood Park, just kind of any of the parks all along up to 294. But my brokerage covers most of the Chicago area. So, I mean, I can always help people. Even if I don't personally end up helping them, I can refer them to somebody internally that, you know, is an excellent agent that can help them. As far as contacting me, it's really easy. Just call or text my cell, 847-894-2433. It's really easy to get in touch with me.
Excellent.
Awesome.
So we're so glad that you agreed to come onto the podcast, John. You share so much value with not only us, but our audiences as well. And we truly, truly appreciate you coming onto the Abundant Culture Podcast. And we pray that you have an even more prosperous year and then maybe get to 15 and 20 million one day. So
awesome. I hope you guys have an awesome year too. 10X year this year.
Yes. Absolutely. For sure. So we appreciate you and we'll stay in contact.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much for the opportunity.
No problem. So that's all we have for today, folks. I hope you got as much value out of this as we did. Keep in mind, the only way we can improve is through constructive feedback. So remember to rate and review this episode. Also, you are not the only person that needs to know this super valuable information. So be sure to subscribe and share as well. Stay tuned for the next episode. And remember to always spread abundance. Peace.